Padres Hot Tub is brought to you by the Padres Hot Tub Patreon account. Hey, John and Craig are out there on the hot podcast front, you know, leaning in with our pith helmets on, staring at the great abyss in front of us. We're creating content, man. We go above and beyond the free feed.
Our pith helmets?
Pith helmets. I was doing like a World War One kind of thing.
Is that the thing with like the little spike
yeah,
on
think
it?
So yeah.
Got it.
At least that's what we're going with for the purpose of this ad.
I thought we needed piss helmets for all the piss missiles.
That could also be the case. So for just $5 a month, which is literally what you'll spend when you walk into a 7-Eleven to get whatever. You know, a big gulp and a hot dog or a coffee and a donut, you know, you're going to spend about $5. It's like forgettable money. We'll give you unforgettable content.
Jesus Christ.
At patreon.com/PadresHotTub. John, tell them what they win for their $5.
Lots of podcasts, more than is on this public feed if you're hearing this ad. You get episodes of Padres Hot Tub way before anyone on the public feed. You get them without ads placed in them.
Yeah.
So you get time back. And
correct.
Time is invaluable, Craig.
Right.
Time, you can't buy more time, except in this instance. For $5 a month, you can get podcasts early. You can skip ads automatically. You're literally buying back chunks of your own life.
Now, above and beyond Padres Hot Tub, and our group therapy, which you've probably been listening to since you already subscribed to this feed, John and I do banter every Monday, and that's all the way through the off season as well. And this is where, you know, we spill our guts sometimes. We'll throw out the hot goss or the tea. Like, well, you know, that's the place where we'll tell secrets that we wouldn't tell elsewhere.
That is true.
And like deeply personal stories sometimes, really funny stuff. That's where banter is. Casual Friday is our off-season Friday podcast where we bring on a guest. We do it live. And let's talk about the Discord, because our patrons, even at the $5 level, never mind that there's a $12 and a $30 level where we take you to Padres games during the season or take you to a brewery even in the off-season and pay your bill.
And you get merchandise, you get stickers, you get shirts, all that good stuff at those upper levels.
All of that stuff. The merch we get, we give to you, all of that. Even at the $5 level, you can be a part of our Discord. We're a vibrant, intelligent, passionate community that is quite generally very respectful as well, gets together to talk about the Padres and to talk about other things, to talk about NFL Sundays, to talk about soccer on Saturday mornings, to talk about the NBA during the season, to talk about the shows we love. All of that is happening on Discord, and the Discord itself would be worth double the value of $5 a month that you just like literally drop out of your pocket as you're sorting through your very rich and busy life. You know, give it to us. It's great. Patreon.com/PadresHotTub.
I get to use a phrase right here that I love, and I don't know if I've ever had the chance to use in my entire life. You ready?
Yes.
It's a steal at twice the price.
It is. Patreon.com/PadresHotTub. Jump on in. Welcome to the Padres Hot Tub, everybody. Is this the last one of regular order? I think it just might be, unless the Padres hire a manager this week.
Yeah, I mean, that won't be regular order, will it? That'll be breaking news.
That's true. That's true. Craig and John with you in the fall studio. Things are
another good reason to not do regular podcasts.
Things are cooling down a little bit. It's very nice. All of the stuff we have, you're wearing, you know, your sweats and your navy thing, hoodie. I've got my you know, winter soccer's jacket. So we're fine. We're comfortable. It's just like the summer. It's more clothes.
Yeah. Although I always consider drinking something that's not cold, because the cold drink just makes me a little bit colder.
Yeah.
Like, I thought about making like a hot toddy or something.
Well, when we drink the whiskey, it's a completely different show.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't do that.
In fact, you know how you have the explicit tab? could you find a W tab?
For whiskey?
Yeah, because like, I just don't want to be, I feel like my whiskey comments should be at like 0.75 in terms of like how much you accept them. It's like, accept 75% of what I say on the whiskey podcast
we
and 100% of these other
we
ones.
We need a verbal version of whiskey dick.
Do you know what poker hand is called whiskey dick?
No.
4-5 is whiskey dick.
Why?
It's probably the length of a whiskey dick.
Oh, jeez.
On today's Padres Hot Tub, we're going to tell you about, and if you're on the free feed, you already just heard us talk about the our Patreon feed. One of the things we do for our patrons every week is an exclusive interview podcast, which we had a different name before, and now we've got a much better name, which is called Have a Drink.
Thank you.
So now it's Have a Drink with whoever we're on with, and that's what we do. We crack a beer just like we do on this podcast, unless it's like 10 in the morning, and then we tip a cup of coffee.
Right.
And
we have a coffee.
It's still a drink, right?
Yeah.
You had said have a beer. That was my little twist to make it better.
Have a drink?
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but good on you.
I don't make the products. I make the products better.
There you go. What's that from?
It was that old commercial. Remember? What was
yeah.
it? It was four letters. I'm trying to remember what the letters were, though. It's like EBFW. We
yeah,
don't
yeah.
make the products. We make the products
better.
Better.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't EBFW, but it was something
No, I
like
know what
that.
You're talking about.
Yeah. So we did an interview podcast last week that was too good to keep behind the paywall. We had to put it out in the free feed because we needed to use it as a clarion call to the Padres organization to get on their P's and Q's about the thing that plagues this organization more than Preller's predilections, more than players quitting on the manager, all right? The Padres' overarching tendency to be injured, to lose player games to injury. And a couple of months, about a month ago, I got the chance to talk to an old friend of mine.
Was that a month and a half ago you talked to Will Carroll?
About a month ago, probably.
Month feels right.
A month is probably right.
Yeah.
That I talked to Will Carroll. And Will Carroll at the Injury Expert, or at Injury Expert, pardon me, on Twitter.
You kept
not
doing
the,
that during the
yeah,
interview,
yeah,
too,
I did
and I was
it
yelling
too.
At you.
Yeah, no. At Injury Expert on Twitter, but he's the Injury Expert. That's
right.
how I think of him, Will
right,
Carroll.
Right.
When you hear what the next guy we're going to talk about had to say about Will, I mean, truly one of the most respected people in the entire country in his field, which is analyzing injury, discussing injury information, disseminating injury information, kind of like putting it in context, putting it in the context of the sports medicine field and sports trainers. And when I interviewed Will, which only our patrons heard, patreon.com/PadresHotTub, Will talked about a strength coach who went to Thailand and had a team in the Taiwanese Professional Baseball League, the number one team, like the Yankees of the league, the richest, most successful team in the league, in 2019, play an entire season, full roster, every transaction, every roster move, zero injuries. Zero. No soft tissue injuries. What are soft tissue injuries, you say? That's that elbow injury. That's that shoulder injury. That's that knee injury.
Right.
It's that hamstring injury.
Yeah,
it's that calf injury.
Doesn't count for like a broken hamate bone.
Correct.
But yeah, any tendon that is torn or ripped or stressed or pulled or anything like that, it would account for.
If you run into a wall, there's nothing you can do if you run into a wall.
Right.
If you run into another player or a baseball breaks your skull,
nothing you can do about that.
Nothing you can do about that. But these other injuries in baseball are far more preventable than believed. And the proof is in a man who was able to take a professional baseball team from spring training to the end of the season with zero soft tissue injuries after, over a course of 3 years, bringing a group down.
Yeah, like, it's funny. I was reading the article after listening to you talk to Will Carroll, and first, I was impressed by, like, how Gary didn't really seem to want to get to Gary, right?
Gary McCoy.
Gary didn't, in the beginning of the article, it didn't seem like he wanted to take as much credit as they wanted to give him. And he was like, oh, no. Like, I can't eliminate injuries. That's not a real thing. I just kind of got lucky and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking in the back of my head, like, maybe he did just get lucky. Like, right time, right place, right group of players, whatever. And then when I saw that the numbers went from, like, X in this year to, like, half that the next year to, like, half. It's, like, every year it just went, like, half until it got down to, like, oh, there was, like, 11 last year, which was nothing, and then this year was zero. I was like, oh, okay, that actually, I can actually see, like, there's a real pattern here that can't be explained by, like, he was just in the right place at the right time.
So we invite you, if you haven't yet, to go back one podcast in the feed to where we put up this Have a Drink for free. We did this on purpose, and I, like, tagged Peter Seidler on Twitter and said, like, of all of our interviews, this is the only one I want Peter Seidler to hear. Like, I really want him to hear. Other ones, if he listened, great. You know, if you wanted to be a $30 a month member, please do, you know. Or a $300 a month member, you know.
Right, we'll take it. He wants to employ us. No, I just didn't.
Hey, let's not go too far. Although, I mean, look, we've got a price. Let's be honest. But
always true.
So
got kids and wives.
We have both of those things. So Greg McCoy, Gary McCoy, pardon me, Gary McCoy, he's an Australian, you know, went through all the classical training, you know, his university degrees, whatnot. He was employed in minor league baseball for over 1,000 games.
Right.
Working in the Miami Marlins organization back when it was called Florida and then later for Houston. All right. And Gary, and when you read the story, for me, it's like the brilliant scientist who stumbles upon the solution, you know, to the problem that you didn't understand how the problem worked. And then they figure out the solution.
Right.
When you think about it, it really does make sense, doesn't it? Baseball is one of the most asymmetrically repetitive sports in the world. Okay. I am a right-hander. So now I'm a right-handed pitcher. And I will repeatedly push off my right heel, the ball of my right foot, lifting my left leg as I use my right leg muscles to push forward and rotate my trunk from right to left, landing always on my left foot with always my left knee accepting that torque as I twist and pronate my right arm, only my right arm, right, and my right shoulder to deliver a 5.5-ounce baseball toward the plate. At maximum velocity, my body is always going to twist the same direction, right to left, every single time.
And you start to think, if I have a strong right arm and a strong right leg, that's all I really need, therefore asymmetrical.
So what am I doing with the left side, right? Nothing. Am I repeating these motions on the opposite side? No. Okay? And it's the same thing if you're a hitter, right? If you're a left-handed hitter, you're always pushing off your left leg, landing on your right leg, swinging through, right? Everything's happening on one side only. When you used to hear how, you know, why would you become a switch hitter? It's, well, you'd have to do 100 swings from the left side and 100 swings from the right side, right?
Right.
So particularly when it comes to the point of pitchers, and I'm just summarizing a little bit here. For everyone who's heard the interview, go back, hear this at greater length. Google Gary McCoy, Thailand injury free. Read the article. Those Google words will get you right there. What Gary realized is you need to train your body. Everything for a pitcher is about accelerating your body toward home plate. But what about deceleration? What about the brakes? What about the part of your body's physique that allows you to stop your motion as you're following through? What about that part? What about training kind of the reverse of everything that you do to fire forward?
And I thought Will did a fantastic job before I even read the article of, I mean, any Padre fan that's watched a lot of Padres baseball, this will immediately work in your head too. But Will was talking about Dinelson Lamet and how, you know, if you watch him throw, especially when he throws that, you know, 90-something mile an hour slider, he's like, you see him throw, and then immediately after the throw, his arm recoils.
Yeah.
Immediately. And he's like, that's your body's natural reaction to you doing something that you shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And, like, that's exactly why you need to teach your body how to stop.
Right.
So that it's not recoiling instead. Because when you're doing something really bad and not making any attempt to slow or stop yourself, it's like you're ramming your you know, you just talked about it, there's nothing you can do about running into a wall. It's like slamming your arm into a wall. Like, it's that kind of stoppage. You're
right.
Going from full speed to bam, done, stop.
Right.
Instead of, like, doing something to slow yourself down to absorb some of that impact.
Right. So here's a thing that Gary uses, and he mentioned it in the interview. It's mentioned in the article as well. So he was working with this one particular pitcher who was in the Marlins system, named Randy Williams, left-handed pitcher. Journeyman dude, right? Couldn't break a pane of glass with his fastball. It sat at about 88. And he was at the end of his rope, and at the end of his season, he knew that he was going to be released. And Gary talked to him and was like, are you done with... He goes, I think I'm done with baseball. And Gary's like, you're done? Do you want to be done? He goes, no, I don't want to be done. He goes, well, do you want to take a risk? He goes, sure, I got nothing to lose. I'll take a risk. And they worked on this, like, the entire off season on building up his ability to decelerate. Okay? And... then Randy Williams got cut by the Marlins, got a minor league invite to the White Sox camp, and Gary gets, you know, is in contact with him, right? First outing of spring training, and he's getting texts, right? Okay, how'd it go? Well, it went okay. What'd you hit, right? Fastball, right? What'd you hit? 88. Oh, no, right? Just crestfallen. 88. What happened? And so then they get on the phone, you know, they talk, and Gary's like, well, like, basically, how much did you push yourself? And he said, he goes, because Randy says, comes into spring training and goes, this is the best I've ever felt in my entire life. I've never felt this good before.
And he was that at the point where they already had, like, registered? He was, like, throwing, like, 95?
He was throwing 88.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Because Randy goes, well, you know, I'm not. It's early in spring training. I'm not pushing myself. I don't want to overexert.
Right, right.
And Gary says, "No, we've built you up now. You can go beyond your old capacity, but you're not comfortable in that new capacity."
Do you remember the metaphor?
Yet.
The metaphor was
so.
So
here's
good.
The metaphor. Gary says, "Imagine if I gave you a Ferrari, and I told you that this Ferrari can go from 0 to 200 in 4 seconds." But after 50 miles an hour, the brakes are kind of shaky.
Right. How fast are you going to drive that car?
How fast are you going to drive that car? 50.
Right.
Never going to drive it over 50.
Right.
We've now fixed your brakes. We fixed your brakes. You can now go 100 and brake. Randy Williams made over $10 million a year pitching in Taiwan. He continued to pitch in the major leagues. He pitched for the White Sox. He went over to the Red Sox. The Red Sox hired him to, like, get out Jason Giambi, like, to be a specialist. And at age, like, 38 in Taiwan, he was throwing 97 miles an hour.
Yeah.
With no injuries the rest
of
his career.
It's an absolutely amazing story.
Right? So that was like the canary in the coal mine for Gary McCoy. The Astros have worked very closely with Gary. But he got the chance to do his own thing in Taiwan, and this is what happened, and then pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, so here's this dude. He lives in Arizona. We interviewed him. You can go listen to it.
Yep. And you should. It's right there. It's free.
This is the one thing the Padres could do that could be Moneyball 2.
Yeah, it could change literally everything.
Everything. The Padres lost 25 war to injury last year. The Padres have like 6 or 7 dudes with Tommy John, and that's not even counting Chris Paddock or Dinelson Lamet.
Can you imagine if you could get Clevinger, Lamet, Darvish, Snell, Morejon to all be throwing harder and stay healthier?
Gore,
Paddock. It'd be incredible.
But it would take probably 3 years.
At least. I mean, 3 years is like, I feel like that's perfect scenario. Like, I feel like that's the minimum it would take.
3 years.
But
an organizational commitment.
Yeah.
A top to down, like, give this dude the keys to the kingdom and give him the ability to fire and hire every strength coach in the system from Rover to Major League. And because that's one of the things he said in the interview is like, I found out 2 years into the Taiwan thing, I had the wrong strength coach.
Got it.
And as soon as I found out I had the wrong strength coach, then the injuries went like, you know, through the floor.
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of like going down a little
bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So like, you need to have that ability and that, and for everyone to commit to a different thing. But how about how the Giants committed to a different approach to their games and won 106 games with a roster that probably should have won 85?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to our club with a roster that should have won 94 winning 79 games.
Yeah. It's the little things.
It's the little things.
And Gary is almost as successful as a person could be on the little things.
Here's the problem. AJ Preller doesn't see this at all. And again, go back to the interview, but Gary had a chance to go into the Padres instructs recently. And
yeah, it was like 3 weeks ago or something, right?
It's not. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It hasn't gone well. Like things aren't there. We're not doing things the right way.
The Padres are not doing things the right way.
Correct.
The Padres, not us, not you and me.
We're trying to lead them to water right now, but I don't know if they'll ever drink. But like, we're worried about $21 million for Eric Hosmer or for Will Myers or $7 million for Jurickson Profar or Ha-Sung Kim or all the different ways that this club is bleeding money right now and at the edge of the luxury tax or over it. Like, what if you could bring your cost per win down from millions into hundreds of thousands?
Right.
What's a way that you could overcome the structural deficiencies of being in a division with the Dodgers and the Giants, who can live at the $200+ million payroll range without ever suffering threat of dying, of financial death?
Yeah.
What's a way you could overcome that gap? It's Moneyball 2.0, it's, man.
I mean, that's
this is the new shit. This is the shit.
For anyone that's unaware of what Moneyball was originally, why it was called Moneyball, it was like the A's needed a way to compete with other teams without having the same financial resources.
Right.
The Padres have good financial resources right now, but they still need to find a way to compete without the same financial resources. Because the Dodgers literally could just hire a guy like this and be like, here's $5 million a year, and they would never feel it. Like, the Padres have to be first to the table. Yeah.
Not to spoil the whole interview through, but, like, many teams have offered Gary a job, but they haven't offered Gary the job.
Got it.
They've offered him a chance to make a program and give it to someone else to fuck up.
Yeah, you could be the advisor. You can't be the trainer, the
right.
head trainer.
If there's one thing Peter Seidler could do that could overcome AJ Preller's issues, it's this. Will he do it?
I hope so.
Okay, so with that, let's talk about the big medical issue of the day. Headline story for Padres Universe. Fernando Tatis Jr. via Kevin Acey has chosen what we figured he'd choose.
What he told us he would choose.
Absolutely.
He didn't lie to us. It's not a surprise.
Not a surprise at all. Highly telegraphed as a Billy Joe Tolliver interception. That, how about that deep cut?
That's a
Charger
reference.
Fan. No surgery on his consistently subluxating shoulder. He is going to try and strengthen the joint, and he's going to hang out. And he's gonna go on. He's 22, and he's gonna heal. He's gonna heal the natural way.
Okay.
No surgery. Not going under the knife. What
sure.
do you think? The world reacted today. What do you think?
I mean, I don't think anything different than what I thought before, which is I wish he would get the surgery. The fact that he won't get the surgery when the team has made it obvious that they would like him to get the surgery is a very bad sign for a 14-year marriage that you signed up for, that you're already on different pages on different opinions about major issues. That sucks. Now, 22-year-old bodies, particularly that 22-year-old body, can sometimes do some pretty miraculous things. So maybe he'll be fine. And yeah, I guess you can look up the five at Clay Bellinger and be like, do we really want him going through whatever that is? Yeah. But at
Cody
the same,
Bellinger has been terrible.
But at the same time, I would just like Tatis to do whatever the doctors tell him is the best thing for him. And he's not, he's choosing to not do that. He's choosing to not listen to the doctors. How many times over the last year and a half we said, I wish people would just listen to their fucking doctor.
Sure.
So yeah, I wish he would listen to his doctor, but I don't hate him. I don't hold any grudge against him for choosing this. It's his body. And I hope that he is made of miracles, as we, you know, he has sometimes shown himself to be.
Unlike vaccine decisions, which impact everyone around you, a decision on what to do with your own shoulder is your own decision. Now, there is some level of vaccine impact in terms of the rest of your team needs you to be healthy. And if you choose not to do something in terms of procedure that consistently leads you to not be available for your team, you're impacting your team, its chance to win, especially when you're Fernando Tatis Jr., one of the three or four best players in the world.
Yeah.
So on that level, you do have to think beyond yourself, right? Even though it is a personal decision. That being said, I'm not a doctor, nor have I ever studied medicine. So when this story came up today, I lobbed an email to our friends, Gary McCoy and Will Carroll.
Friends of the podcast.
Correct. And asked, what are your guys' thoughts on Tatis announcing today that he will not have surgery on his shoulder? What does Tatis need to do now to avoid further injury? Okay.
Okay. Who replied first?
You're getting this exclusive on the Padres Hot Tub.
I haven't even heard this.
Gary McCoy replied first.
Okay.
Difficult to answer without seeing the scans.
Wait,
and to
you don't
understand
want to do this
the
in the Australian
the
accent?
Difficult to answer without without seeing the scans and to understand the impact of the decision. No. For me, cut is always the last choice. The degree of subluxation, right? The degree of sublux can likely be managed externally if there was some engineering around his swing path. If the left hand supinates opens in the swing significantly, then the moment arm length and force will place significant tissue stress in the shoulder. I'd be experimenting in the cage this winter with a wrist hand guard that assists a shorter lock, which would likely achieve two things. One, add a layer of prevention, but more importantly, two, give him the confidence to swing fully. Again, all very surface suggestions without seeing an MRI, medical staff, etc.
Supinates?
Opens, yeah.
I heard you define
pronate, supinate, yeah.
I've never heard the phrase supinates before. Mm-hmm. I would have figured it had something to do with soup.
I think I have heard that.
I know for
frisbee stuff.
I know
I heard
pronates
for
like running. Like yeah. I'm a pronated runner, but supinates fun.
That's the other direction.
Yeah,
that's the other direction. And then Will was like, "What he said," and it's about to yeah, and it's about Tatis, and Tatis didn't want the surgery, so he's not going to get the surgery.
Okay, you know? So I mean, look, that's positive news.
It really is.
The positive news is this can be managed. He might want to wear a wrist guard to help with it.
Here's the Gary replied to Will, and said, I think on a sublax, there are just limited guarantees of a successful surgery that wouldn't implicate his ability to produce power. Strengthen the hell out of posterior chain is step one. Step two is eccentrically load the pec on the left side. Sorry, the mechanic in me is coming out. So these are like, but look, if you hire this guy, he can walk into the room and go, okay, first thing you need is a wrist guard that can help you lock your wrist in a certain spot.
Second, let's talk about
your left pectoral muscle
and how it connects to your posterior.
Yeah.
And the chain of
your posterior chain, your kinetic chain.
There are important things to know. They're super. So We were talking a little bit about the NBA on Banter. This type of thing is happening in the NBA. It's called biomechanics. And in the NBA, they learned, kind of like Gary is you know, trying to get everyone to learn, like, hey, it's really important that you learn how to decelerate. The NBA learned through people like him that how you land can totally prevent lower body injuries.
There you go.
And they, like, sometimes it's as basic as, like, players that naturally land on one leg after they jump have an extremely high risk of injury. Players that land on two do not. Joel Embiid entered the league as a player who got injured a lot. And then after he entered the league, he kept getting injured a lot. The Sixers hired a biomechanic engineer, whatever, biomechanical engineer, to work with him and literally taught him, no matter what you're doing on the court, here's how you fall. If you're dunking, you're getting slammed into, here's how you fall. If you can't land on 2 feet, land on your shoulder. I know that sounds violent, but you will avoid knee injuries, foot injuries, ankle injuries, soft tissue injuries. So yeah, this type of stuff can change a player, a team, a league. It's already kind of changing the NBA. I would not be surprised if it changes Major League Baseball next.
And the thing is, just consider this for a second, okay? Because really, when you think about it 21, 22 years later, it's almost kind of comical. Billy Beane is sitting up there in Oakland with like a $20 million payroll and no opportunity to compete against teams spending five times as much, spending more than his team payroll on their shortstop, in the case of Texas. And he figures out that on base percentage is more important to scoring runs than batting average.
It sounds so hilariously ancient now.
Right?
It was not that long ago.
I'm telling you, when I was on the air with Ben in 2000 doing Padres pre and post game, I was thumping the fucking on base percentage drum. Like, OBP matters more. And people would be like, shut up. What are you talking about? You know, and doing just that, he was able to take this ragamuffin franchise and have it be winning 100 games a year by figuring out that guys who walked 80 times were more valuable than guys who walked 8 times but hit 270.
Yep.
And now everybody understands this. Everybody in the league understands this. And now you've got baseball operating with a team bat with a collective league batting average of like 240 or something, or 245.
Jesus Christ.
You know, and yet the on base percentage is like 50 or 60 points, or even 30 or 40 for teams higher. And everyone, and every good team, at literally every single good team in the league, has an orthodox approach to offense.
Well, and this is the emphasis on base percentage and finding guys who walk is also a reason why changing your launch angle and aiming for home runs is possible without destroying your game. Like, if these guys weren't walking but were striking out at this level, it doesn't matter how many home runs or fly balls they hit, they would suck.
Right.
But if they can do that, hit a ton of fly balls, hit a ton of home runs, strike out a lot, and walk a lot, that's more valuable than a guy who's hitting 290 with no power and no walking.
So at one point, Moneyball was on base, as simple as on base percentage.
Right.
And then it becomes launch angle.
Right.
And then it becomes spin rate. Right?
Right.
And there's innovation on innovation on innovation that takes the game to a different level, and the first adopter gets a first adopter advantage that is this, you know, asymmetrical advantage in a league that is built on billions of dollars on incremental gain, right? A team that can be 3% better than it was before can be the team that makes hundreds of millions of dollars more,
right,
than it did before.
Right.
But when it comes to injury, specifically injury, specifically baseball injury, this is the place where you are as likely to find someone calling on a shaman or a cleric to deliver healing as you are somebody to look to the science of biomechanics.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because they'll look at the science of biomechanics and be like, how can we get our guys to throw harder? You know, the drive line.
Yeah.
Like, how can we get our guys to throw 101 miles per hour? But while they're doing that, there's almost no thought to, like, how do we get them to do it without their arm exploding?
Gary says in the interview, he believes in his lifetime he will watch a man throw a 110-mile-an-hour fastball.
Okay.
And it's because of not accelerating.
Decelerating.
Figuring out how to break.
Yeah.
Having the best breaks in the world. You know? And I know why can't the Padres, I know the answer to the question I'm asking. Why can't the Padres be this team that leads the revolution? And the answer is A.J. Preller standing in the way. Period. Period.
I mean, there's also, I need to be a little bit the voice of reason here. The Taiwanese Baseball League is not Major League Baseball.
Sure.
They're not throwing 100 miles an hour in the Taiwanese Baseball League, as far as I know.
But bodies are bodies, and that's...
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, like, I'm sure that every time his name gets brought up in an MLB office, the answer is, like, sure, that works in Taiwan. Like, is that going to work with these guys who are throwing harder, working harder, hitting harder? Like, I'm not saying, like, it's a different game, but it's kind of a different game.
It's the same type of philosophy that has led 100 football coaches to punt on 4th-and-3 from the opponent's 45. And now Brandon Staley is going on at it from 4th-and-3 from his own 9 in the fourth quarter. Because that's actually what the math says and has said.
Well, they were losing. They had to.
Dennis Green would never have done that. Every head coach before him would never have done that,
right,
except for that high school coach in Texas who created the chart.
No, I'm just saying don't give Brandon Staley the credit. Like, this has been happening for 10 years, and you know who got there before everybody else in the NFL? Bill Belichick.
Right.
Because Bill Belichick has made a career out of being like, if I get there first, if I do the thing first, if I run the spread offense in the NFL first, or for the first time in 20 years, you're all going to be trying to keep up. And if I'm, you know, all going for it on fourth down more than any other coaches, going for 2-point conversions more than any other coaches, like, that's an advantage that I have because you're all afraid to do it. The first coach or organization or whatever that tries something, there's a little bit of risk, but there's a whole lot of potential benefit.
Yeah.
And, like, Bill Belichick gets that.
And here's the biggest problem to wrap up the topic. You know what franchise is going to do this?
The Tampa Bay Rays?
No, the fucking Dodgers.
Nah, them too.
It's the Dodgers or the Giants are going to come across this because they have hired an entire room of quants to figure out what the next thing is. And one of these guys is going to subscribe to this podcast or come across it on a recommendation.
Hi, Dodger guy.
And be like, yeah, what about Gary McCoy?
That's Dodger loving.
You know, so Padres, get off your ass. You know, this could be the most frustrating podcast in the history of Padres Hot Tub. Like, here's the path to do a thing that could make you the team of the 2020s.
I'm going
to
be honest. If you're looking for a good time to fire your head trainer right now, after the season that just happened,
yes,
no one's going to question whether or not
blow
that was the
them
right
all out.
Everyone's going to, and I don't mean to say like, hey, like that's a real person with like a real
right,
job and family and bills and everything. But I'm saying from the Padres side of things, if you were to fire your head trainer right now, nobody would bat an eye. No one would be like, well, that guy's been great. They'd be like, well, that makes sense. Have you seen their pitching staff the last couple of years literally turn into a tire fire? They can't keep Tatis healthy. They can't blah, blah, blah. Like, I almost said Tommy Pham, and then I remember he got stabbed in the back. But Trent Grisham, like other people who cannot stay healthy, like no one would be like, oh, that's a great training staff. How do you let them go? Except for, you know, the paid employees that like the guy.
All right, after this break, manager stuff. Okay, manager stuff. Let's not go too long.
Like I say manager stuff, like some people say butt stuff.
Yeah. Well, hello. Not going to ask a follow-up. Mike Schilt got let go by the St. Louis Cardinals. Mike Schilt is the only person I've heard officially will have an interview with the San Diego Padres.
Yee-hoo,
let's talk about Mike Schilt for a minute.
Do we need to?
I don't want Mike Schilt to be the next manager of the Padres.
I know they want someone with experience, but like I think that experience should be like good experience. Like they got their team to the World Series or have played in a World Series or have something beyond like my team went on an improbable late season run and we snuck into the playoffs only to get steamrolled by an actual good team. Like I don't view Mike Schilt as anything. Like I don't view him as anything except like he's like Jace Tingler 5 years from now. Like, I don't care.
I'd be more intrigued than Jace Tingler 5 years from now. Mike Schilt, on the positive. Now, this is what I heard on the radio. I should probably look it up. Had in three full seasons with the Cardinals, had won 90-plus three times.
Which radio?
I think it was on Darren.
Okay.
It was on Darren today. So successful every single year of his Cardinals managerial career, including this year.
Yeah, he's going to finish like second in manager of the year voting, probably.
Team loves him. Team likes to play for him. Team's held together for him. Of course, Yachty knew. He could handle it.
Yachty can handle that clubhouse
and
by
if,
himself.
And if not Yachty, Waino, right there. On the pitching side, has his back.
Yep.
Hand in glove. The day that Mike Schilt is released, it is so easy on sports radio or just as a Padres fan to go, wait a second.
What about Mike Schilt?
Seems like he did a great job. Wasn't he manager of the year? Couldn't he be manager of the year again? Hasn't he been one of the most surprising managers, like, in baseball? Successful managers in baseball?
I just did an eye roll and then realized that does not come across on a podcast.
I saw it.
But
it was a
very hard eye roll.
It was a hard eye roll. Then the stories start to come out a little bit about how the Cardinals would possibly part with their multiple playoff-making manager. Seems there were organizational differences. Seems like some of those differences involved a front office that wanted to pass along analytical information to the club and a manager that wasn't interested in doing those things. A manager that had a culture that differed from what the organization wanted. Why is this the kind of guy that would help guide the San Diego Padres to a higher position than they currently are?
It's the same bullshit with like, oh, this guy's got gold gloves, so you know he's a good defensive first baseman. Like, it's such bare bones level of analysis that it's wrong. Like 80% of the time you get an analysis, it doesn't go any deeper than that. It's just wrong. And in this case, it's wrong. Like, why does he keep getting voted manager of the year? Because he's manager of the Cardinals and the Cardinals have a good record. Like, is that his fault? Is it his fault they have a good record?
Right.
I should say credit. Does he get credit for them having a good record? He shouldn't. They had a good record before him. They'll have a good record after him. Yachty knew.
Mike Schilt's got a really good record.
Bet he does. He managed the St. Louis Cardinals. Mike Matheny had a good record with the freaking Cardinals.
Not good enough. Got canned for
like
Mike
one
Schilt.
One bad year.
It was more than that, man. You don't watch the Cardinals very closely. Yeah,
Mike
Matheny
got screwed.
Three seasons
their best
with the Cardinals.
Died in the Dominican or wherever.
All right. Took over a team that Mike Matheny dragged into the gutter in 2018. Okay. Led them to a 41-28 record, 594 percentage. They climbed up to third but couldn't make the playoffs because they were in too deep a hole. In 2019, 91-71, won the Central. In 2020, well, 30-28 in the bullshit season, but made the playoffs, lost to the Padres.
Yep.
And this year, 90-72. Won the wild card, and I mean, shit, won one in the ninth before you know, Chris Taylor hits a homer. They could be where the Dodgers are, absolutely.
Really crazy how they went from, like, not a very good team to a very good team, and all they did was change managers and trade for Goldschmidt and Arenado. Wild. Wild how that happens.
Those things matter, too. Of course, the Padres, you know, signed Machado.
Right.
Traded for Darvish.
Yes.
And
no,
Snell,
I know.
Musgrove.
I'm not comparing the Cardinals to the Padres right now. I'm saying people are giving Mike Shildt credit for the team getting better talent wise. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't get the credit. In my mind, he doesn't get the credit.
I don't think Mike Shildt's a fit. I think Mike Shildt would be not. I think he's a bad fit on literally every level. He is the type of manager that I would expect would provide the level of conflict with the front office that would be equivalent to the Bochy-Showalter class, Bochy-Showalter-Socha class that's been drifted out there,
without
right?
Without the ability to come in and pound the ring on the table.
Without the ring to pound on the table, correct. And furthermore, he has none of the new school appeal that any other potential managerial candidate could have, that you feel like the team will get progressive and will take a step forward. I mean, just fucking hire Ned Yost while you're at it. You know, Mike Shildt led like 3 of the 5 worst bunts in baseball this year. You know, that's the kind of guy you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
Here's why it could happen. AJ's got flaws. What's AJ Preller's biggest outside acquisition flaw? We've talked about it a lot.
He likes to buy high.
Yes. And who's the one candidate on the market that everyone's like, what the hell is he doing out there?
Mike Shildt.
Mike Shildt. Why was Mike Shildt fired? Mike Shildt might get manager of the year. And that is that chasing the glimmer is what's led us to all of the worst decisions AJ Preller's ever made.
Probably, yeah.
Do not hire Mike Shildt. Kevin Acey gave me a like tweet when he said Mike Shildt will get an interview with the Padres. And Ron Washington won't.
Have you come down off the blah, blah? Because I have. I thought that one through, and then it made sense.
So the reason he won't get an interview is because they can hire him without one, right? They basically know what he is. If they get to Ron Washington, they don't have to interview him.
So AJ's worked with him, worked with a ton of people that's worked with him, so he already knows him there.
Right.
They interviewed him literally 2 years ago? So what are you going to accomplish in the interview now,
right,
that you didn't ask and answer 2 years ago? And I had a third point here.
Oh, is it jerking him around to bring him in for an interview if you don't hire him?
Isn't it
just a jerk-off, right?
Also that it could be viewed as a total jerk-off thing. But yeah, this was the other thing. Ron Washington was in San Diego like a month ago.
Right.
Braves were playing the Padres.
Right. If they wanted to talk, they could have talked.
I guarantee you Ron Washington at some point sat in AJ Preller's office for about 20 minutes, and they just chatted, and Preller was like, that's all I need. And you know what? The conversation probably went like this. Hey, if we were to have an availability at the manager level, and then Ron was like, absolutely, you know I'm your guy. Yeah. You know I'm your guy. I would absolutely take that 100%. I would lead this team to multiple World Series. You know it. You know I'm your guy. And AJ was like, all right, that's all I needed to hear. Fine. Like, what? There's nothing to gain from interviewing Ron Washington again.
Yeah. All right.
I don't think it means he's out of the running. As a matter of fact, I think he's probably still the lead candidate.
Well, let's wrap up with your improbable candidate or your manager list. Last week we had Bochy, Luis Rojas, Aaron Boone, if he was ever available, Washington is our fallback as our list. Are we adjusting this list?
So, I don't remember Boone being on the list.
It was.
Was he?
Yeah.
Because the more I think about, maybe it was because the Yankees let Nevin go too. More I thought about it, I was like, Nevin's not getting a manager's job this year. Boone has a lot more credibility than a Jace Tingler, than any first-time manager, right? He's probably got as much credibility as Ron Washington.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because he was such a good player, had his huge playoff moment, probably won a ring with the Yankees?
No.
Just got to the World Series?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? Doesn't matter. Had playoff success, had playoff moments, had a good career. His brother played for the Padres, right? Didn't Brett Boone play for the Padres for a while?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think he would come with Nevin. Like, so it would be like Boone as manager, Nevin as,
sure,
as bench
coach.
Sure,
you'd figure he'd bring Nevin, yeah.
And the more I thought about like that, like bringing in Boone and Nevin compared to every other hire Preller has made would be such a dramatic step up.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's why it won't happen. Boone's going to stay in New York.
Probably. Man, the Yankees really like to dick people around. But it just, like, it feels so stable. Like, it feels borderline regal to be like, we as the Padres got a pretty successful manager, the Yankees, and a bench coach who we know and love in Nevin, and we know that these guys are actually pretty good.
Right.
Like, if they did that, I would just have to praise them because it's such a dramatic step up from every managerial hire AJ Preller has made to this point. Ron Washington still feels like it goes in the category of like AJ still hiring his friends.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe these stories have only come out since we podcasted last week. Maybe I'm just forgetting what I said last week. It's possible. We drink while we do this.
Yeah,
podcast.
It's true.
But I've seen more than one report that Boone has basically been told the Padres' job is his if he wants it, which leads me to believe that he's the front runner.
Okay, I kind of believe that too. I think that Boone might be the inside the Padres' office front runner, but they can't get him because he's still New York's.
Well, his contract expires after the World Series.
Right,
or whatever, right?
World Series ain't over.
Oh, World Series not over. It's true. We could come out with a... But again, talking about Preller shopping at the height of the market, like, I'm sure that... And loving loud tools. I'm sure he's just sitting there going, like, I could steal the Yankees
right,
manager
exactly.
and bench coach.
Yeah, I know. Yankees manager.
And they're not even, like, an embarrassment. And, like, I don't know if you've ever looked into it, but, like, Preller has a lot of, like, literal, like, frat buddies from Cornell that they all came up with together, and they're all in baseball. Like, there's literally, like, 12 guys that were all, like, in the same fraternity at Cornell the same year, and they're all in baseball together. They all, like, came in different ways, but they're all in baseball together. And, like, half of them work for the Yankees. So, like, I guarantee you there's a little part of him that's like, oh, the Yankees aren't the Rangers, but he's still, like, I know that guy.
That's he'll respect the Yankees.
Yeah, right. Okay, so did you come up with an unrealistic manager candidate? I stole this one from our Discord, but the more
okay.
I thought about it, the more I liked it.
All right, give it to me.
And then I shared it with a friend of mine, and he made me like it even more.
Okay, what is it?
So on the Discord, someone said, in response to a very sweet video that I retweeted this morning.
Okay, now I know who it is. Okay.
Mudcat for manager.
Yeah, Mark, yeah. That's never going to happen.
Okay, so I told you. I said it doesn't have a 0% chance of
right.
happening. It has a 0.001% chance of happening. This is a team that's hired Jerry Coleman to be its manager before. If they came out tomorrow and said Mark Grant is the manager, we'd all be like, that's
okay.
fucking crazy.
Right.
But it's not the sign of the apocalypse.
Right.
It's not like we dug up Whitey Ford and he's the manager of the team. He's
played more big league games than Jace Tingler and Andy Green combined.
Easily.
By miles.
Easily. And the Padres fans and media would let him get away with murder. And you know, like, just based off what he has said, you know that, like, he at least respects analytics.
Yeah.
And, like, has an understanding of, like, when to push a player, when to pull back. I don't know if he's fluent in Spanish, but he knows how to yell cuidado.
Pisa Mahado.
So I shared this with a friend of mine. I was like, this is my, like, my super
yeah.
unrealistic, like, dream manager that would never happen. And honestly, I probably don't want it to happen. And I will say this for Mudcat. He's too smart to even accept the job. Correct. If it were ever offered to him, he would immediately turn it down. But my friend had the best response. He said, I would love Mudcat as manager if Orsillo continued to make fat jokes about him every single game. And I was like,
there's the manager, Mark Grant, looking a bit portly.
And I was like, imagine like the mid-game interview between Mud and Don. And so then we start playing it out, and Don's like, oh, so they couldn't find a uniform your size, huh? That one looks like the buttons are about to pop. Like,
equipment manager run out of XXL?
Yeah, so now my dream is Mudcat as manager, and Orsillo is just solo, but literally doing nothing but fat jokes for 9 innings every game.
Oh, my God.
It's never going to happen. I mean, it's just a funny thought in my head. But did you come up with any sort of unrealistic potential managers for the San Diego Padres?
Well, I thought about Trevor, and I think that's just as unrealistic.
Probably right.
And quite frankly, Aaron Boone is probably just as unrealistic.
Wait, Why do you think that?
I don't think there's any chance the Yankees are going to let him go. Why? I think they would have let him go if they were going to let him go. I think they would have just, that would have been that.
Why let him hang?
They're negotiating.
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Those penny-pinching Yankees.
Hey, got to find a dollar where you can find a dollar, you know? They'll never respect Aaron as much as we'll respect Aaron if he comes to our town. That's the first place that made him a manager. So they're always going to hold it over his head. You're the manager of the Yankees. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas here, we'd be like, oh, thank God, you're coming to rescue us. The last dude didn't even know what a big league ball paycheck looked like. You
would
know?
You like a 15-year deal?
Yeah. Hey, my unrealistic guy is, I'm going to stick with my same guy.
It's Bochy.
Moises Alou.
Where is Moises Alou? And has he ever managed a baseball game?
He's in the Maldives vacationing, and I'm not sure.
Okay. You just like him because his dad was an okay manager.
A great manager.
Was he?
Felipe Alou was a great manager. Yes, he was a great manager. You could look it up.
Okay.
And dealing with like the worst kind of shit.
You have to remember, I'm younger than you. If I remember correctly, I only really remember Felipe Alou like managing the Expos, like the bad Expos.
No, the good Expos.
And then handing it off to Frank Robinson.
Felipe Alou is a, and the Giants. He managed the Giants for a number of years.
He did manage the Giants for a while, yes.
Felipe Alou was a great manager. Moises is like that combination of all these things. He was a great player. Like a legitimately great player that would command respect in the major leagues. There's very few people who would come up and go, like, Moises Alou, he was bullshit. Like, you know.
Could he teach Tatis to pee on his hands?
or
Mackenzie Gore.
Right.
He could solve Mackenzie Gore's. Oh, my goodness.
Every blister problem gone forever.
God.
But so he's got that. He's got the bilinguality. He's got the pedigree. He has been on great teams. He has been coached by great managers. His father was a great manager. Like everything, he's worked in the MLB front office. You know, he's worked in the Padres front office. I feel like every box is ticked on Moises Alou. I just don't think he wants to be a big league manager.
If he wanted to, he'd probably be one by now.
He'd probably be a great one.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when we were last doing this in 2019, he was in the Padres organization. And I was like,
was he?
Yeah.
Back when they were hiring every like former player to be part of the random front office.
And so I was like, this makes sense. Like, give him the job. But of course, it was Jace's job. It was never anyone else's job.
Of course.
It was Jace's job from day one. So Moises never got that chance. Now he's not in the Padres organization. And so there's probably a 0.001% chance.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Mine's more fun than yours.
How could it not be? It was your premise.
I know.
Padres hot tub, only half full.